Unbeknownst to Lilia, I'd stored Angelo in my father's old lab, down in the mansion's catacombs, and had given him the dose of larvae that I'd intended to give the sex worker back in Thresher Bay. Every fiber of my being had compelled me to kill him for putting his hands on her, but I needed to keep him breathing in order for him to serve as my next test subject. I took comfort in knowing he'd suffer a much slower hell than that which a quick bullet or severed artery might have inflicted. Not even flaying him alive would be considered torturous enough to quell the rage burning inside of me. I also planned to administer a dose to Lippincott, because there was no doubt in my mind that he'd put Angelo up to killing Lilia, and the connection between the two bastards had me believing he'd likely also been behind Cade's kidnapping. So blind in my pursuits and desperation to cure my illness, I'd failed to see what was in front of me the whole time. He'd fuck with the only two people in the world who'd ever mattered to me, and for that, he would die a slow and painful death. As he was well known to stop into my office for a drink, I figured the means of inoculation would be relatively simple. I'd call him in to discuss the new variant, offer him a drink, then watch his world crumble. I slowed my car to a stop in the small parking lot just outside of the cadaver entrance and made my way inside. As far as he knew, Lilia was dead. I hadn't given him any reason to suspect that I was involved with her, so unless he'd come to his own suspicions, he wouldn't have made the connection that she was anything important to me. I'd sent him a text the day before, informing him that she hadn't shown up to classes. I was merely serving as the informant he'd requested of me. It was then he'd made the lame excuse that, due to budgeting issues, he hadn't been able to approve another semester for her. I hadn't squawked about it. Hadn't given the slightest indication that I cared, a reaction further reinforced when I told him that I'd had success with the latest variant, to which he'd responded favorably. As far as Lippincott was concerned, he'd dealt with Lilia quietly. Thanks to Langmore, to whom I'd make a point to offer my gratitude, he'd had the rug pulled out from under him. I hustled toward my office, peeking in on Achilles and Patroclus, who continued to respond well to the Blackstone concoction I'd administered. I could attest, I'd also sustained my sense of feeling for days without any decline. In my office, I prepared the contaminated liquor that I intended to offer Lippincott, injecting the fresh eggs into the decanter. As I placed it back into the cupboard of my desk, I noticed a figure standing in the doorway. Lippincott. "Pardon the intrusion," he said, crossing the room toward the seat across from me. "Been a long day. Someone took it upon themselves to trash my office. I have a feeling it was Spencer." I fell into my chair across from him. "Any reason why he'd do that?" "He's a fuck-up, that's why." He let out a mirthless chuckle. "Can I tell you a secret, Devrick?" The slight lack of focus in his eyes hinted that he'd already gotten into the liquor. "He isn't even mine," he whispered and snorted a laugh. Frowning, I stared back at him, wondering if he was telling the truth or just drunk. I pulled the decanter of alcohol from the cupboard of my desk and held it up. Nodding, he flicked his fingers, and I poured the liquor into a glass, pushing it across my desk. "You're in deep shit, Devrick. That's why I'm here." "And for what?" He screwed his eyes shut and snorted another laugh. "For what? For what? Are you fucking with me right now?" I didn't respond, unsure if it was the alcohol talking or not. "Melisandre Winthrop has accused you of holding her at knife point and threatening to cut her fucking nipples off with a blade. That's what." The accusation slapped me across the face like a wet towel. "What?" "Yeah? She claims you attacked her for some files." Files? I had no clue what the hell he was talking about. "And when did she claim this happened?" "The night before last, in her dorm." "Bullshit. I was cutting out Angelo's tongue and stitching Lilia's face the night before last." "Are you trying to bring this crap back to the fore, Devrick?" "I'm admittedly gobsmacked by this. I've no idea what you're talking about." "Come on, man, it's me. Me!" He lifted the glass of liquor from the desk, as if he might drink it, but paused. "What the fuck are you thinking, Devrick? Melisandre Winthrop? The chairman's daughter? Are you nuts?" "I never threatened her." Shaking his head, he pulled his phone from his pocket and clicked on a video. "As you know," Lippincott prattled on, "the chairman does not take kindly to any sort of threats." A figure wearing a black hoodie entered the front door of what appeared to be Corbeau Hall, He glanced toward the camera, just as Lippincott hit pause, and the breath exploded out of me, like staring at a fucking mirror, an exact replica of me. Cademan? It was a wonder Lippincott couldn't hear the frantic pounding of my heart as I stared down at what I was certain was my twin. My brain refused to accept it, though, even as I studied his features, unable to summon a goddamn word beyond, "What the fuck?" "A number of witnesses saw you enter the dorm, Devrick." My mind scrambled for a reason, an explanation. Every fiber of me stood paralyzed in shock. My brother, my twin. For years I'd thought he was dead, mutilated. Was I imagining it all? I couldn't be. Lippincott had said others had seen him too. I schooled my face to avoid showing any of the utter chaos swimming in my head right then. Lippincott stared down at his drink, swirling it around. He tipped back a sip, a sight I should have relished, but I was too busy untangling myself from impossibility. "The Rooks are coming for you, Devrick. Winthrop is fucking pissed. Melisandre is his princess, as you know." His voice remained a distant sound to the incessant pounding inside my head right then. It was only when he drew a gun, pointing the barrel at me, that I broke from my trance. "You've always been like a son to me. Hell, more of a son than my own." "What are you doing, Edward?" I asked, silently calculating how long it would take, how many days of suffering would have to pass for him to realize that I'd already ended his life in that single sip. As he took another, I held back the maddening desire to laugh. "The way I see it, this ship is sinking. Fast. I'm just claiming my lifeboat is all." "I don't understand." No, not so much that I didn't understand as I didn't give a damn. Bigger fish to fry. "I want everything you have on the toxin, Devrick. All of your research." He stuffed his hands inside his pocket and held up an external chip, tossing it onto my desk. "Copy everything onto the chip, and I promise you won't have to die. I want all the data, all the formulations, everything." "That's 2 generations of work you're asking me to hand over to you." In truth, I didn't care about any of it right then. I wanted to go find my brother, to disprove the impossibility clamoring inside my head. This shit with Lippincott was nothing but a distraction. "Yes, you're about to crash. You realize when Winthrop comes for you, he's not going to let you off, right? Not even your name will spare you." My name had never offered much to spare me anyway. It was only the promise of what I could offer to redeem it. I glanced down at the chip and back to him. "Did you hire Angelo to kill Lilia?" At that point, I didn't give a shit if he knew about the two of us. Knowing eyes narrowed on me, and he tipped his head. "Now, what would you know about that, Devrick? Answer the question, or I'll destroy every shred of this study. And how would you accomplish that in a matter of seconds before the bullet hit you?" Idiot. If he thought for 1 second that I ever trusted him entirely, that I ever trusted any Rook for that matter, he was far more foolish than I'd originally estimated. "I've installed a failsafe. A virus. In the event something should happen to me. One click, Edward, and everything would disappear." His jaw shifted, his eyes a psychotic shade of black. "You were always good at this game. Far more clever than your father." He rubbed the back of his neck and let out a groan. "Yes, I had her killed. I tried to be discreet about it, but that didn't work out. So I had to take more aggressive measures. She was a liability." "Discreet. You were the one who drugged her with the Nox berries at the gala." "Well, technically, no. The server did. For a rather excessive gratuity. The fact that Lilia hadn't gotten infected either proved that he was ignorant about the infectivity of Noxberries, or posed a whole new mystery about my little moth that I'd have to unravel later. "Lilia was a liability to me," he babbled on. "I made a mistake years ago, fucking her mother, and it nearly cost me my career, my marriage, my fucking life." "How are you so sure she's yours?" The last word arrived strangled, my head refusing to allow him any level of possession over her, even fatherly. "She's mine. That bitch promised me. 4 years ago, she came to me, soon after her own mother had died. She claimed she wanted to save their family home. She had assured me then that she'd lost the pregnancy. But when I saw Lilia that day in the dining hall, I just knew the bitch had lied to me. 4 years ago. That was about the time when her mother got sick. I suppose it was. He shook his head on a dramatic sigh and clicked his tongue. Tragic thing. You killed her mother. I eliminated a problem. She should have met a watery grave with the 6 other women. Why she didn't is a fucking mystery of the ages. Perhaps not so much of a mystery if she'd been exposed to the Black Rock. If my hypothesis proved true, it would have protected her for a short time. Unfortunately, she was too much of a threat to investigate the why of that. And then the bitch took off. I thought maybe she'd died after all, until she walked back into my life again like a goddamn herpes infection. Then that other lunatic showed up, accusing me of putting worms in her. You had her report altered, just like you had me alter Andrea's. Wearing a smug grin, he lifted his glass like a toast, and I wanted to laugh at the irony of it, but I was too busy imagining what he'd look like with a mouthful of busted teeth. Blackmail is a beautiful thing. I had so much shit dug up on that corner, he'd have fucked her corpse if I'd asked him. Why, Lilia? She wouldn't have even known, had you just left it alone. It was Gilchrist who couldn't leave it alone, that relentless cunt. Rubbing his fingers together, he shifted in the seat, seething in his rage. She's had it in for me for 2 decades now. The woman is desperate to sabotage my career and my marriage. She was the one who told your father about my little affair with that whore. On a long exhale, he rolled his shoulders back. A whore who swore to me that she'd lost the baby. Imagine my fucking surprise when a walking replica of her, about the right goddamn age, came strolling into the lunchroom that day. I should have never listened to you and kicked her out right then and there. Hand shaky, he frantically tipped back another sip. It's a game for Gilchrist. A sick game to watch me fail, and I, for one, am tired of being pushed around by fucking women. Breathing hard through his nose, he sat quiet for a moment, as if trying to collect himself. With his face lobster red, I wondered if he was about to keel from a stroke. I'm going to let you in on a little secret, Devrick, one I haven't told anyone. I shouldn't be telling you, but you've been like a son to me. More of a son than my own. Why do you keep saying that? Because it's true. Spencer isn't even mine. He was a product of my wife's affair with your father. The man just couldn't help himself, dropping bomb after bomb in my lap. Was there a paternity test to confirm this? There was a paternity test to rule me out. Your father refused. There was no point in asking if it could have been someone else's. I'd seen my father with her. Had watched the two of them together. So you fucked Lilia's mom to get back at your wife. I'm not going to lie. Vanessa Corbin's cunt was worth the risk. In another life, I might have even loved her. A sickening thought where Lilia was concerned. But enough of this. Copy the files, Devrick. Please don't make me blow your brains out of your skull. Teeth grinding in my head, I logged into the computer, thoughts spinning with how to outsmart the drunken fool while my head felt like it was about to explode. A notification popped up on the screen. An email from Spencer.
Chapter 63. Lilia. In the bathroom mirror, I twisted my face to the side, eyeing the bottom of the wound, where I recalled the blade scraping against bone. Sickened by the thought, I turned away. Even if Devrick had meted out his own form of justice, I'd never rid myself of Angelo. He'd always be there, every time I had to look in the mirror. Every time I'd find myself desperate to forget that night, the vestiges left behind would take me right back to it. I brushed my teeth with the toothbrush I'd rifled out of my suitcase, cringing each time the movement of my jaw stretched the stitches. I'd changed into a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, and after relieving myself and applying some deodorant I'd scrounged from my suitcase, I decided to leave my room and explore the expansive mansion. The crack created by my ajar door showed a dark hallway. Spying an ornate light switch a few steps down from my room, I stepped out into the corridor and flicked it. Antique sconces on the wall lit up, glowing as if a flame burned inside of them. I padded down the hallway, passing enormous portraits, some of which were covered in white sheets. From the paisley print runner across thick wooden floors, the beautiful crystal chandelier that hung from the ceiling beyond the staircase, to the rich detail in all of the trim, the house carried a very regal appeal about it, a far cry from where I'd grown up. I found it strange that Devrick had let the house sit unused, abandoned. When I reached the staircase, I turned toward one particularly striking portrait on the wall. An austere man with light hair and intense eyes stood flanked by two identically handsome boys, perhaps no more than 16 years old by my estimates. I couldn't say that, with their serious expressions, I'd have been able to tell the two apart. Trouble, for sure. Both boys carried a deviant glint in their eyes, one a slight smirk to his lips that had probably turned a lot of girls into a gooey mess. Tired wood creaked beneath my feet as I made my way down the stairs to the foyer of the house. Nothing there looked familiar to me. I couldn't recall one moment when I'd awakened to see anything, the night he'd carried me up to that room. I must have been out cold. A den stood off to the right of the foyer, all the furniture covered in sheets, and as I made my way down the hallway, I passed a library, a small bathroom, a storage room under the staircase, and an empty utility closet. A faint sound reached my ear as I stepped back from the closet, and closing the door, I frowned. I listened again, more intently. Closing my eyes brought the sound to the fore, an agonized scream. Crystals of fear skated down my neck, and my eyes shot open. "Go back to the bedroom," my head urged. I knew in that instant what Devrick had done with Angelo. A wild fear shook my muscles, and I touched the wound at my face.
"He won't hurt you again,"
Devrick's words echoed in my mind. For reasons I couldn't grasp, I needed to see for myself. I needed to know if there was even the remote possibility that he'd come for me again. I wanted to take something from him, so that if he ended up dying at Devrick's hands, he wouldn't haunt me in death. While every muscle in my body warred with my head, my feet moved on their own toward the door through which the screams seemed to bleed. My hand brushed against my thigh, an instinct to grab my pocket knife. I lifted my gaze to the kitchen and dashed ahead, searching for a knife block. Instead, I opened a drawer to a collection of fancy steel blades. I opted for a thick cleaver, the edge of which looked sharp enough to cut bone. Of course, I didn't want to imagine that, but in the event that Angelo may try to attack again, at least I was armed. I tiptoed back to the door and listened again. The cries seemed fainter than before, but still carried a pitch of agony. As I placed my hand on the knob, I tried to imagine what state he might have been in. "Don't do it. Leave it alone." I couldn't, though. The bastard had threatened to fuck me with the sharp end of a blade, and I believed he would have carried through on that. I opened the door to a staircase that descended into darkness below. A flip of the switch beside me brought the old-fashioned sconces flickering to life, lighting the path ahead. Cold air sent puffs of steam from my mouth, and shivers only added to the anxiety pulsing through me as I made my way down the cold stone staircase. Down. Down, until the bottom finally opened into a dark corridor that extended in both directions. I flipped on lights, illuminating the long stretch to my left, and waited, listening. Anxiety crushed my lungs, and I breathed hard through my nose. Cleaver still in hand, I held my arms to stave off the cold. Quiet moans directed me to the left, and I padded in that way. A door at the end of the corridor stood cracked. God, please, let him be restrained or something. Swallowing past the lump in my throat, I peeked inside. The moans grew louder, pulse pounding, I widened the crack of the door. Across the room, Angelo lay on a steel examination table. His arms had been removed and cauterized, leaving only a dark burned stump. Air sawed in and out of me as my feet brought me closer and my eyes swallowed up the gore laid out before me. I'd clocked some of it in my periphery, my head locked on the necklace covered in blood at his throat. With a trembling hand, I reached out for it, curling it into my palm, and he turned toward me on a scream. My breaths choked on a jolt of terror as his body wriggled in panic, and a jerk of my hand tore the necklace away from him. Blood streaked down his temples from his eyes that had been maliciously gouged. I trailed my gaze lower toward the slaughter I'd avoided looking at directly. His stomach had been cut open, his entrails spilling out, blood everywhere I looked. Body writhing on the surface, he opened his mouth and released a moan, and I caught sight of the sawed tongue still oozing blood, which he spat as he turned to cough. A slithering cold stirred in my gut. I dropped to my knees, the knife hitting the cement on a clatter. Acid shot up my throat, burning my nose, and poured out onto the floor, spattering over the surface. Angelo's moans heightened into a panicked howl. Beside me, a piece of his bowels lay on the floor, and I upchucked again, arms trembling as I fought to remain upright. A clammy, cold sweat settled over me, my head dizzy as I turned away from him. Necklace clutched in my hand, I pushed to my feet, and a wave of vertigo struck, knocking me to my knees again. It was too much. Too fucking much. Hands pressed to my ears to keep from hearing him moan, I stumbled toward the door, and once out of the room, I fell against the wall, every muscle quaking with fear and repulsion. Not so much for the fact that Devrick had punished him. I didn't even want to imagine what the scene must have looked like to him when he walked in on Angelo assaulting me, but I needed to. I needed to force myself to imagine what could have brought a man to inflict such brutality. My head pushed through the shock and summoned the horrible things Angelo had promised to do to me. Slicing my throat, cutting me up so he could easily remove me from the apartment. Yes. All those things he'd promised to do, and he would have. I didn't doubt that. With a renewed anger, I pushed off the wall and made my way back toward the staircase. Another high-pitched scream from the room brought me to a halt. Icy branches of fear skittered down the back of my neck as I turned toward the room where Angelo lay. His screams fell to an eerie silence. I waited to hear if they'd start back up again. A figure stepped out into the corridor. Ripples of terror coiled around my spine as I stared back at the obscure form of someone in a long cape and a plague mask. In his hand was the cleaver I'd dropped, its surface wet with what I had little doubt was blood. Air stuttered in my chest and I closed my eyes. Not real. He's not real. He's not real. Except when I opened my eyes, he was still standing there. And when he prowled toward me, my muscles seized up. Lungs locked. I couldn't scream. I couldn't move. For what seemed like an eternity, I stood watching this apparition I'd made in my head trek toward me at a sickening pace. The doorbell rang. He ground to a halt. I broke from the trance and glanced to the side where a light shined at the top of the staircase. Adrenaline surged through my veins and I pivoted and dashed up the stairs. A tearless sob broke from my chest. I glanced over my shoulder to see him chasing after me and I let out a scream. The moment I breached the staircase, I sprinted down the hallway to the foyer and swung the door open on Professor Gilchrist, who let out a wild screech of flying hands.
Please, please, he's after me, he's coming.
A light push knocked her sideways as I bolted past her. I damned near leapt down the stone staircase toward the gravelly, overgrown circular drive. It was there that I twisted around and waited for the masked man to come flying out at me. Wheezing and gasping, I stood bent over myself, waiting. He didn't appear. Seconds ticked by, the air cold on my skin as an autumn breeze swept over me. Frowning, Gilchrist tipped her head and peered into the house. I imagined it to be the moment the killer cracked her in the skull with the blade, but instead she turned to me with a frown.
Lilia, are you all right?
It was...
I couldn't catch my breath, the fear and sickness still twisting up my insides.
I swear, there was someone.
God, maybe I'd imagined it again. Maybe the sight of Angelo had triggered the visual. With a trembling hand, I rubbed my forehead and took long, easy breaths.
Lilia, are you sure you're all right?
Her voice held a guarded edge of uncertainty. Head lowered, I let out an exasperated exhale and nodded.
Yeah, I'm okay.
What happened to your face?
I fell.
I lied, watching the skepticism deepen her frown. I needed to get back inside, to shut her out before she got nosy. With quick strides, I hustled back up the stairs for the door, frowning when the strangeness of her visit finally struck me. Devrick had told me no one would know I was here. Had he sent her? What are you doing here? I asked, my voice as guarded as hers had been moments ago. Perhaps I should be asking you the same question. It's my understanding you left. Devrick hadn't sent her then. Devrick isn't here, I said, backing myself into the house, ready to slam the door in her face if necessary.
I'm here, beautiful.
At the sound of the deep, spine-tingling voice, I turned to see him casually strolling down the hallway toward me, his hands tucked in the pockets of his dark jeans. A black form-fitting t-shirt was a contrast to the white button-down he'd worn earlier. Confused, I took a step back as he approached. Where? Gaze shifting toward the opened door of the cellar staircase and back, I shook my head. When did you return?
Just a few minutes ago,
he said, slowing to a stop. Eyes adoring, he cupped my face and gave a gentle stroke of my cheek just outside of the scar. The urge to turn away from him pulling at me. In returning my attention to the driveway, I noted his car wasn't there. Had he parked it in the garage or out back? Had he arrived with Gilchrist? When I turned back to him, I caught sight of a red splotch at the corner of his eye, as if he'd broken a blood vessel there. My staring also drew attention to a scar just outside of the same eye that I hadn't noticed before. The corner of his lips curved to a smirk, and he turned his attention to Gilchrist.
I trust you brought what I asked.
She held up a black memory chip as he stepped past me to her side, grabbing her by the waist in a way that looked too intimate. He pressed a kiss to her lips. What the fuck? Jaw unhinged, I stared back at the two of them, trying to discern whether or not I was caught up in a nightmare, perhaps a hallucination. My heart withered, and it was only when my chest punched for air that I realized I'd held my breath. What is this? I managed through choked breaths. Devrick twisted toward me and smiled, swiping the chip from Gilchrist's hand.
Isn't this what you wanted from her, Lilia? All the files in the Crixon Project?
I shifted my gaze from him to her and backed myself further away from the two of them, my head spinning in chaotic confusion. It must have been a dream, a horrible, fucked-up dream. Devrick, why would you do this? He didn't answer, didn't wear a single ounce of remorse in his apathetic expression as he stepped toward me, reaching out a hand that I swatted away. Don't fucking touch me.
Don't be like that, baby,
he said while I mentally fought to make sense of the scenario. Baby? He never called me baby. What the hell was this? The smug grin on Gilchrist's face twisted to repulsion as she stared back at me. Oh, God, your wound is bleeding. An air of disgust clung to her words, and I lifted my hand to my wet cheek, drawing my hand away to show bright red blood painted across my fingertips. That looks positively awful, she added, still grimacing. Devrick's lips curled to a snarl, and he took a harsh grip on Gilchrist's hair, tugging her head back. The reaction so out of character, I jumped back on a sharp breath. Devrick, she said, her voice affected by the angle of her head. What are you doing? He turned back to me, and from a holster strapped at his hip that I hadn't noticed earlier, he tugged out a knife, pointing it at me. Air exploded out of my lungs on a shocked exhale. He planned to hurt me?
Go. Have a seat in the den,
he commanded in a gruff tone.
We need to talk.
I didn't want to talk. I silently begged my head to wake up from this horrible nightmare that was tearing at my heart. Just let me go, please. I won't say anything, just let me go. My gaze shifted toward the door, gauging if I could slip past him and Gilchrist. As I lurched toward it, he released Gilchrist and stepped to the side, blocking my escape.
Sit.
Fuck this. I spun around on my heel and headed in the opposite direction. A sharp whoosh rushed past my ear and thunked against the wall ahead of me. I skidded to a halt. The hilt of his blade stuck out from the wall, taunting me with the realization that it had just missed my head.
Don't make me hurt you.
Hurt me? I hadn't thought him capable of such a thing. I turned around to find him unlatching a second holster at his hip, and before he could remove what I assumed was another blade there, I shuffled past the two of them into the den. Arms crossed, I plopped down on the couch, my whole body trembling from a mix of adrenaline, anger, and fear. Something I never imagined I'd ever feel with Devrick. I studied the room in search of escape, while my head continued to spin in disbelief. What had happened in the moments from when he'd left until now? He directed Gilchrist toward a chair and removed the sheet covering it. As she took her seat, he placed his hands on her shoulders, rubbing them. And again that smug grin found me. From the floor where he'd discarded it, he swiped up the sheet that had covered the chair and held it in front of her.
Arms crossed,
he commanded. Frowning, she kicked her head to the side. Excuse me? Instead of answering, he grabbed one of her arms and pressed it into her chest, then the other, roughly forcing her to cross them. Wearing a mask of confusion that mirrored my own, she held them there without moving, and he trapped her inside of the sheet, gathering the ends of it behind her chair, back around to the front, and behind her again, securing her.
We're gonna play a little game. Lilia, I'm going to ask her some questions, and she's going to answer. If she doesn't, you get to watch me soak this sheet in her blood.
Jesus. Gilchrist gasped, her face twisting with new fear, and I watched her throat bob with a swallow. I eyed the exit again, wondering if he had the balls to throw a knife in my skull. Once she was secured, he stepped back and turned to me.
Are you ready?
Still frowning, I stared back at him, searching for any sign that this was some crazy scheme he'd conjured, and I just hadn't caught on yet. I looked back to her, and for once I imagined we both agreed on one thing. Something was absolutely fucked about this.
How did Lilia's mother become infected?
I snapped my gaze to him, taken aback that he'd ask the very question that had plagued me since I'd found out about the Crixon Project. The very one she'd offered to tell me had I left Dracadia. While I suspected from my mother's note that she had somehow gotten infected in her meeting with Lippincott, I wanted to see what Gilchrist knew, if there was something tangible that I could use against him. She didn't answer at first, but with a hard nudge from Devrick, she glanced over her shoulder and shifted in her chair. Her mother seemed to have natural resistance, as was documented in her chart. When that changed, I don't know. What I do know is I saw Vanessa with Lippincott 4 years ago, about the same time she got sick, and I firmly believe it was that encounter which sealed her fate.
How do you know this?
He asked, as if he were inside my head right then. If you're asking for proof, all I can say for a fact is that I distinctly remember her leaving his office. Beyond that, it's speculation. Who else would have wanted her dead? I didn't like this game with him, but I couldn't deny the relief in knowing that her timeline seemed to match the one from my mother's note.
Did you kill Jenny Herrick?
Devrick circled her, coming to a stop in front of her. At first, she didn't answer, but when he reached for his holster, she cleared her throat. No, of course not. She nosed around, but she wasn't a threat to me by any means.
In other words, I didn't want to fuck her, so you had no reason to be jealous.
She shot him a disgraced-looking glance and nodded.
Tell her what you told me about Spencer.
I learned from Spencer that Mel had made a drunken confession to him the night he drugged her. She seemed to shift in her chair, as if uncomfortable in her restraints. She claimed to have a sexual relationship with his father. Her eyes fell on me, the expression in them far less cavalier. Your father, essentially. And? Why do I care about that? I snipped, eyeing the door again.
Don't be so quick to dismiss the small details, Lilia.
Devrick warned.
They might be important.
So we're clear. I had no part in getting you expelled. I may be a bitch, but I'm not that ruthless. I begged to differ. Spencer mentioned that someone had put him up to drugging Mel. Was it you? I asked him to see what he could gather from her. Drugging her was not my idea. But you manipulated him, took advantage of him. Why?
To live among the wealthy, you have to learn how to manipulate the game, or they will eat you alive. There's no better way to learn your enemy's secrets than befriending the son he can't stand. Spencer was merely a pawn and nothing more. Eyes narrowed in disgust, I shook my head. I was right. You are a horrible woman.
It's time to play a different game now.
Devrick interrupted, his eyes on me again.
The one where I fuck you in front of her.
Needles of panic numbed my throat and I shook my head. You touch me and I'll... I choked on the last word.
You'll what?
He stared back at me with a cagey grin.
Fighting only makes it better for me.
Fuck you. His eye twitched.
That's a fantastic idea.
He spun Gilchrist around to face the fireplace. As he strode toward me, he peeled off his shirt. Tattoos and scars colored his chest and abdomen. A skull jester, a dagger piercing a heart, another skull in barbed wire with gears and a clock's face, and two pissed-off-looking dragons at each flank that disappeared behind his back. My heart stuttered. Not Devrick. Definitely not Devrick. Oh, God. I scrambled backward as he lowered to his knees in front of me, tongue sweeping over his lips. Rough hands gripped my ankles, jerking me toward him. You're Cademan, I whispered. A part of me felt relieved, the other part of me still reeling from the shock. What is going on? Gilchrist asked, neck craning over her shoulder. Fists planted at either side of me, he pushed forward, caging me against the back of the couch as if he might kiss me. I kicked my head to the side in refusal, and he licked the edge of my wound that had bled moments ago, twisting my stomach.
So loyal to him, aren't you?
He nipped my earlobe with his teeth.
Pity. I love a good revenge fuck.
Where Devrick smelled of cinnamon and cologne, Cademan smelled of mint and leather with a hint of campfire.
Do you like my artwork? I made it for you.
You did that to Angelo? I spoke as low as I could to keep Gilchrist from making out what I'd said.
Devrick had a head start with his tongue and some severed body parts. Appendages, mostly. His hands are in a specimen jar. How fucking romantic.
His dark chuckle spiraled around my nerves, squeezing them. Oh, God, Devrick had actually cut them off as promised.
My brother's come a long way, hasn't he?
A gentle grip of my jaw turned my face back to his. He shared the same copper-colored eyes as Devrick, though his held more of a feral glint.
He isn't like us, though.
How so?
This scar that Angelo put on your face.
He shifted his gaze to my wounded cheek and back.
He put one on me, too.
He leaned back, offering a view of his torso, where a white scar marked a slash in his stomach, covered by his dragon tattoo there.
You and me? We're gonna go on a little ride together.
He released me and jumped to his feet, swiping up the discarded shirt.
Now.
A glance to Gilchrist and back, and I frowned. You can't just leave her like that. I had no good reason to help the woman, but it wasn't right to leave her tied up there. I scurried toward her, keeping my eyes on him in the event he tried to stop me with one of his blades. Once her binds were loosened, she scrambled out of the chair, letting the sheet fall to the floor as she pushed to her feet. At the tight grip of my arm, I turned on a gasp to see Cademan pulling me after him. I wrenched my arm to get loose, planting my heels as firmly as I could. Where are you taking me? Just tell me, and I promise I won't fight. His eyes shifted from Gilchrist to mine, and no doubt he'd picked up on my intent to have her privy to the location in the hope she'd run into Devrick.
The university,
he said, as if it didn't trouble him to reveal it. You won't get in, not without an admin code, Gilchrist argued. Cademan swung back around.
I already have a code.
Devrick's, no doubt. A rough jerk of my arm had me stumbling after him. I had no reason to trust him. I had no reason not to trust him either, even if he was a hell of a lot scarier than Devrick. He was still Devrick's brother, after all. The one he'd thought was dead all this time. The one who plagued him with guilt. I followed Cademan out of the house to Gilchrist's car in the driveway.
At first, I thought he'd try taking her car until he unsheathed his blade and slashed two of her tires.
Why would you do that?
He didn't answer, just tightened his grip, yanking me after him toward the gate.
So that was you, in the cellar, with the mask?
All the time I'd thought of it as nothing but a trick of my head, it turned out to be real. When he didn't bother to answer, I added, "Interesting choice of costume."
It belongs to your boyfriend.
What? A divot in the lawn rolled my ankle and I stumbled, bringing Cademan to a stop. A mild ache throbbed in my foot, only a minor distraction to the turbulence pummeling my thoughts as I grappled with his admission. No. Devrick had told me the costume I'd seen was all in my head. You're lying.
The liar is the one you've been fucking all this time.
Gripped tighter than before, he pulled me after him as he continued on his path.
What is the costume for?
To hide their faces when they murder.
Who's they?
The Rooks. Your little fuck toy is one of them.
It was clear in that moment that Cade harbored animosity toward Devrick. Did that extend to me as well? I twisted my wrist, testing the strength of his grip, only to find it was immovable. Was it you following me around on campus? I asked, as we breached the iron gates that I recalled seeing with Devrick when we'd visited the mansion. He didn't answer, but offered an insidious half-smile that reminded me of his twin. The similarity between them was unmistakable, but the more I stared, the more I noticed the differences too. The small, subtle scars on his face, a wound at the back of his neck as if it had been cut open at some point, scars on his hands, some discolored and stretched, like his skin had healed wrong. He was the broken version of Devrick. He headed toward the woods with little concern over the sharp twigs that scratched at my feet as I hopped over the brush after him. Why did you kill Angelo? I don't believe that was for me. It seemed far too passionate of a kill for him to have done that for me.
Had I known Angelo was hiding out with you the whole time, I'd have spared you that scar.
The pieces suddenly snapped into place. Realization dawned on me. It was you. You were after him. You were the one he was afraid of. You're the one who brutalized that rich guy, the CEO or whatever he was. He swung around, and before I could even so much as breathe, he gripped my throat.
Don't,
he said through clenched teeth. Fear shook me as I took in the deadly glint in his eyes. Whoever that man was, he'd done something to him, that much was clear. I stared back at him, not saying a word, until he finally released me. With another yank, he dragged me forward toward a small stone structure that reminded me of a petite cottage. Behind it stood a sleek black motorcycle, the sporty variety. Shaking my head, I backed up a step. I'm not getting on that thing, not with you. Ignoring me, he shoved a helmet toward me, which I pushed away.
Don't fuck with me. Put it on.
At least tell me this much. Do you plan to kill me?
Every minute that you stall putting that helmet on, I find less reason to keep you alive.
With trembling hands, I slid the helmet over my head, letting out a pained hiss as the cushioned interior of it slid across my stitches. Helmetless, Cade kicked his leg over the bike and jerked his head for me to get on. I could have run, but I didn't trust that he wouldn't kill me. So I did as he told me. I got on the fucking bike.
Chapter 64. Devrick. As Lippincott downed his drink, I clicked on the email from Spencer, an attached video clip with a message that read, "To think the arrogant prick thought this was encrypted. Guess he shouldn't have roomed me with a computer genius. At midnight, this will go out to every student and faculty member on campus. Just thought you'd want an early viewing. Ask him about the file Jenny had that night." Lippincott prattled on, bitching about Gilchrist and how he planned to pay her back for all the trouble she'd caused. As subtly as I could muster, I clicked on the video, which opened to a scene of the cadaver tunnel, obviously from before I'd had the cameras removed. A figure strode toward the camera, a young blonde, clutching the strap of her book bag as she hustled down the hallway while glancing over her shoulder. Jenny Herrick. The screen flickered to the next clip of her entering the incinerator room. As she made her way toward the exit at the opposite side of the room, she came to a halt and backed up. The video had no sound, so I couldn't make out what had her backing away from the exit. Not until another figure moved into the frame. Melisandre Winthrop. The body language and throwing of arms told me the two of them were arguing. I gave a quick glance toward Lippincott, who leaned forward, pushing his glass toward me. I poured him more of the contaminated liquor, then turned my attention back to the video in time to see Mel grab hold of the shovel used to remove ash from the incinerators. She whacked Jenny over the head so hard, I flinched, noting that Lippincott had his face buried in his glass. The nauseating impact sent the girl tumbling to the floor, as if stunned by what she'd done. Melisandre backed herself away, dropping the shovel. Looking toward the door and back to Jenny, she seemed to be contemplating whether or not to help her, or flee. She pulled a cell phone from her back pocket and made a call. Time lapsed in the video, then sped up, as if it had been edited. 2 minutes, 3, 4, 5, nearly 10 minutes later, a third figure entered the room, Lippincott. Another glance showed the real version of him sinking into his chair, tapping his finger on the rim of his glass with impatience as he waited on me. Back on the video, Mel threw herself at Lippincott, and I had to swallow back my repulsion when she kissed him. Strange, given the way he'd flocked to his son's side sometime after Jenny's disappearance, when Mel had accused Spencer of assaulting her. To save face, of course. It wasn't as if he gave a shit about Spencer. She spun around for the door, and the moment she was out of the frame, Lippincott knelt to the floor and rifled through Jenny's book bag. He pulled what appeared to be a manila envelope and flipped through the pages. Paused, seeming to read, he rubbed a hand down his face. After scrambling to his feet, he darted for one of the incinerators, pressing the button to fire it up, and continued to flip through the folder. Another brief perusal, and he tossed the entire file into the incinerator and ran a hand through his hair, looking back at Jenny. "This is taking quite some time, Devrick. Let's hurry it along," he said in a bored tone across from me. "You're asking for 2 decades of data, Edward. Relax." In the video, Lippincott dragged Jenny's limp body toward the incinerator. Teeth grinding, I watched as he opened the door of it. He laid her out on the steel bed. No. Fuck. One hard shove sent her body into the awaiting flames. When he slammed the door shut on her, I had to bite my fucking cheek to keep from making a sound. Fire flickered through the window of the incinerator door. A hand appeared on the other side. In the video, Lippincott jumped back at the same time I did. I ran a hand through my hair to calm the alarm beating through me. He killed her. Burned her. Alive. All captured on a video he'd somehow suppressed. I didn't know how the hell Spencer had managed to get his hands on the footage, but he just cleared my name in a 16-minute-and-37-second clip. "What's the problem?" Lippincott asked, holding the gun loosely in his hand. "Program crashed. I need to reboot. It's going to take a minute." "I don't have a fucking minute." "Then I guess you should have approved the fucking request from finance to boost the internet." "Fine." Groaning, he rubbed his gun-toting hand across his brow. "But hurry. This gun is getting heavier by the minute." As I pretended to wait for my computer to restart, I crossed my arms, staring back at him. "Do you remember that weird glitch we had a while back? Shut everything down for an hour?" "How could I forget? Everyone blamed me for it. They blamed me for everything. Lack of internet, lack of department supplies, tidal waves and full moons," he said in a mocking voice. "I hate this goddamn job. When President Whiting leaves, I will bulldoze my way to his position and be done with this menial shit." Ignoring his comment, I asked, "That was the glitch that affected the Herrick feed, wasn't it? Why are you asking this? Are we really going to revisit Jenny Herrick right now? Are you feeling so kicked down you need me to shove your nose and shit all over again?" I looked him square in the eye. "What was the file you threw into the incinerator?" Sharp amusement carved his expression, and he ran his tongue over his teeth. "Careful, Devrick. You're walking the same fine thread that your father walked." "And what does it matter? If you don't kill me, Winthrop plans to do the job. You might as well tell me what it was that branded me a fucking monster." "That file she stole held incriminating evidence against your father." "Since when did you give a shit about his reputation? You've smeared his name through the dirt throughout all of my academic career." He let out a mirthless laugh. "You're an ungrateful shit. I was protecting you. You, Devrick, It was your reputation on the line, not his, and I cleaned up, didn't I? Did you spend so much as a fucking hour in prison? On my father's deathbed, he told me you sabotaged the experiment. You're the reason it was shut down. At the time, I just thought he was desperate and pathetic, looking to blame someone else. But now I'm wondering if maybe those files spoke a different truth. His jaw shifted with obvious anger. That study was supposed to have been mine. Mine! I should have been the primary investigator. You got Lilia's mother pregnant. My father kicked you out, so you got pissed off and swapped the injections. You infected those women. You sent them to their deaths, and our family took the blame. Someone needed to knock him off his throne, didn't they? Imagine the power he would have amassed had that study been a success. Snarling back at me, he sat forward in his chair. Enough of this fucking history. Give me the files, Devrick, now. He shot up from his seat and rounded my desk. The barrel of his gun bit into my flank. I want to see them copied onto the chip, and I want you to delete them from your computer afterwards. A pause followed, and I felt a slight nudge of the barrel at my ribs. It just occurred to me. You didn't bother to pour yourself a drink this time. It was the bottle you bought me for Christmas. I don't care for inferior quality. Pour yourself a drink. Do you want these files tonight, or pour yourself a drink? From the cabinet, I grabbed another glass and poured the liquor into it. At the press of his gun, I lifted the glass as if to drink it. Before it got to my lips, I pivoted around and flung the liquor into his face. Fuck! Squinting, he stumbled backward, and I cracked the glass over his head. He fell against my desk, the flail of his arm knocking the decanter onto the floor where it shattered. The gun went off, and although a thudding pressure hit my shoulder, there was no immediate pain, just a sickening numbness. I knew I'd been hit, though. Motherfucker! I barreled forward, taking him to the floor and slamming his gun-toting hand into the sharp corner of my desk until the weapon tumbled from his palm. Ah, fuck! Fuck! He cried out, cradling what was undoubtedly two broken fingers, given the way they bent at an unnatural angle. Swiping up the gun, I jumped to my feet and pointed at his skull with a steady hand as I held my wounded arm limp against my body. A quick sideways glance showed a blossom of blood, confirming that I'd been hit. You had my brother kidnapped. It was you. Say it. That research was mine. Your father stole it from me. Bullshit. If that were true, he'd have found the funding for his own lab the moment the grant had become null. He hadn't known where to begin with the research, which was why he'd recruited me to carry on my father's work. Teeth clenched, I dared myself to pull the trigger. You had my brother kidnapped. Fucking say it. When he didn't answer, I knelt down and propped the gun beneath his chin. A look of fear claimed him as he tipped his head back, staring up at me. Yes, I took Cademan. I didn't plan to kill him, though. Who knew your father was such a greedy prick? A numb chill slid through my veins, my muscles burning with the urge to pull the trigger and end him. All these years, I believed your bullshit, your lies. You handed him off to Angelo. And what happened then? He was just going to keep him for a while, see if your old man had a change of heart. I nudged the gun firmly beneath his skull, visualizing the beauty of watching his brain shoot out the top of his head. And when he didn't, he hesitated, the gun bobbing with his harsh swallow. I told Angelo to get rid of him. I didn't bother to tell him that Cade was alive. Had I not seen the proof of that myself a few moments ago, I'd have happily dragged Lippincott into the autopsy room and dissected him alive. Do it, he taunted. You don't have the balls to kill me. I grinned at that. What makes you think I'm so merciful as to offer you a quick death? I pushed off him, biting back laughter when his eyes damn near bulged out of his sockets. He looked toward his glass on my desk and back to me. What have you done? When he tried to lurch toward me, he let out a pained groan, cradling his hand again. What the fuck have you done? At the sound of a distant thud, I snapped my attention to my computer, where an alert notified me that someone had opened the door to the lab from upstairs. I yanked the plug on my computer and hustled across the room, peering around the corner.
Winthrop has had it in for you for a while,
Lippincott said, pushing to his feet.
You're fucked, Devrick. The Rooks are coming for you.
Three men in black suits strode toward my office. All three of them I recognized as current members of the Rooks. I knew damned well it wasn't me they'd punish, though. I was too important. Years I'd gone with little liability. Nothing they could use against me. Lilia. I needed to get to Lilia. If they imagined for one moment that she was alive and had any connection to me at all, they would use her against me. I slipped out of my office, and at the first crack of gunfire, I ducked low and plowed through the laboratory doors. Perhaps I was wrong about them not wanting to kill me. Footfalls told me the men were in pursuit, but by the time they reached the lab, I was already crashing through the door to the autopsy room. A searing hot pain flared in my shoulder as the adrenaline from before wore off, but I pushed the agony aside, making my way toward the cadaver entrance. Another shot fired, and another. As I rounded a corner, a bullet whizzed past me, exploding against the stone wall ahead. With my gun-toting arm, I slammed through a heavy steel door on a jarring ache that spiraled up my neck and found my car still parked in the lot where I'd left it. The cool nighttime air failed to extinguish the scorching burn of my muscles as I jogged across the lot and skidded around the back of the car to the driver's side. Once the men had breached the exit, I fired a shot. One of them let out a curse and fell to the ground, holding his leg. The other two kept on toward me. I scrambled into the driver's seat, fired up the car, and threw it into reverse before gunning it right toward them. The car plowed at them like a bowling ball, scattering the men as they dove out of the way. A quick shift to drive, and I hammered the gas on a squeal of tires, catching a glimpse of them clambering to their feet in the side mirror. A bullet hit the back passenger window, shattering the glass. Another hit the back of the car somewhere. Given the shitty aim, it seemed they were only trying to slow me down, to apprehend me rather than kill me. The plinking metal sound beneath the car confirmed that theory as one of them shot toward my tires. Once outside of the lot, the surrounding trees swallowed me in darkness and the gunshots faded. As I sped along the mountain road, I dialed Lilia's cell phone number. No answer. I dialed again. Again, no answer. A searing ache throbbed in my shoulder, and using the hand of my shot arm to steer the car, I palpated the back of it for an exit wound. My nerves screamed a fiery hell, and nausea gurgled in my throat as I ran my fingers over ragged flesh that marked the bullet's passage. Meaning, I wouldn't have to dig the thing out of me, thank fuck. I sped through town, toward the mansion, and caught sight of someone flagging me from the side of the road. Gilchrist. Part of me wanted to zip past her without bothering to stop, but her presence sent up red flags, particularly when she kept glancing over her shoulder, as if something followed her. I slowed the car and rolled down the passenger window.
Devrick, thank God. If you're headed to the Bramwell estate, know that Lilia isn't there.
How do you know that? With a shake of her head, she gave a dismissive wave.
It's a long story. I apparently met your charming twin.
She asked the question as if expecting me to confirm, which I didn't.
Lilia is with him. Some men in suits arrived looking around. I snuck away as I noticed they were carrying guns.
The Rooks, if I had to guess, probably waiting for me to return. Where was Lilia taken?
They're headed back to the university as far as I know. You didn't pass them?
I couldn't recall having passed a single car on the way there. Teeth clenched. I let out a growl of frustration. If you need a ride, get in. As she hurried to open the door, my muscles bunched with annoyance for having to wait on her. Once she'd plopped into the seat, I turned the car around and headed back toward the university.
Oh, my, your shoulder is bleeding.
Brilliant observation.
Are you hurt?
I slid a frown toward her. For an expert, she certainly asked her fair share of stupid questions. I'm fine. I jerked my head toward the glove box. Hand me the Betadine tape and gauze from the first aid kit, will you?
Of course.
She shot forward for the kit and pulled out the requested supplies from inside.
Would you like me to dress the wound for you?
No. I didn't want her hands anywhere near me. tear off a piece of tape and stick it to the dash, then take the wheel. She did as I asked, and as she gripped hold of the wheel, I pulled up on the gas a little and peeled my shirt back. Ignoring her gasp, I sprayed both the entrance and exit wounds thoroughly, allowing the excess fluids to drip at either side. One-handedly, I wrapped my shoulder in gauze and secured it with the piece of tape. She lowered her hand from the wheel as I took control of it again.
Are you in some trouble? Who were those men in the suits I saw back at the manor?
Evangelists, looking to spread the word, I said in a humorless tone. I twisted my arm, checking the seal of the tape, when I heard her give a small chuckle that withered to a sigh. I wanted to ask what the hell she was doing back at my father's home, but wasn't interested in engaging her.
Beverick, you love her?
I didn't answer her. I hadn't said those words to Lilia, so why she thought she deserved to know first was beyond my scope of giving a fuck.
A silly question, I suppose.
She prattled on.
I'm sorry. And I'm not saying that for her sake, or for the sake of whatever relationship you have with her. I'm saying it to you.
Perhaps it's best we remain silent on this drive. I didn't have time for petty platitudes, especially not when they arrived so late. Neither did I have time for conversation with a person I had no interest in talking to. With my foot to the floor, I ignored the woman who stirred so much trouble and gunned it toward where I hoped I'd find Lilia.
Chapter 65. Lilia. The helmet pressed into my wound as the wind whipped around me. I'd never been on a motorcycle in my life, but I could honestly say I found nothing appealing about the ride right then, particularly with how fast Cademan was speeding down the road. The fact that I was forced so closely to his body troubled me. It felt too intimate and wrong. Even so, I held on for dear life, terrified that I would fly off the back of the bike if I released him. He slowed his speed and pulled off the main road, down a wooded path where a sign read Caskoden Falls, with an arrow pointing deeper into the woods. Panic swelled in my lungs, my panting breaths beating against my face inside the helmet, while he rolled the bike to a stop and cut the engine. As he sat up, his back pressed to my breasts, I immediately pushed off him and climbed from the bike, shoving the helmet's face shield up. Why are we stopped?
We're not sticking around.
He glanced down at his watch, which flashed with some kind of alert.
Get back on.
Cade, please, I'm not an enemy here. Just tell me where you're taking me.
I told you. To the university.
This isn't the university. Brow quirked. He didn't bother to look up at me.
I can see why he likes you. You're brilliant.
You're angry at him. Why? Like every other time, no answer. He stared at his watch as if counting down to something. I looked around at the surrounding trees, which had begun to darken with the oncoming dusk.
Don't even think of it. I'll put a blade in the back of your skull the moment you step off the path.
His words somehow brought to mind the other night with Angelo. The helplessness I'd felt then. The fear. It angered me that I had found myself in that position again. Imprisoned to some psychopath. No, anger wasn't the right word. I was pissed. Enraged. I ground my teeth as the fury took hold and climbed from my belly to my throat. If you're planning to kill him, know that I'll kill you first, I blurted before I could stop myself. Feral eyes lifted to mine and he slowly lowered his arm. His lips twitched as if to smile.
Where I'm from, that's called foreplay.
Where I'm from, it's a promise.
Get on the bike.
Tell me whether you plan to kill him, I challenged. He stared at me for a moment, as if silently contemplating if I was worth the extra weight on his motorcycle.
Get on the fucking bike now,
he said, resting his hand on the holster at his hip. Instead, I remained fixed where I was, as if my body refused to comply, yet every cell quivered with the uncertainty of whether I'd pissed him off just enough for him to follow through on his threat.
You want to save him? Get on, or I'll leave your ass here.
It might have been a bluff. He could have very well been lying to my face. But it was better than every other alternative swimming through my head right then. So I climbed back onto the bike as he commanded.
You try anything tricky when we arrive at the gate, and I'll gut you open in front of the guard.
Admittedly, the frequency of his threats had begun to wear on me a bit. They no longer held the same punch as when we were back at the mansion. While Cade's intentions and motivations remained a blur to me, I had a sense he didn't want to kill me. It was hard to say what it was exactly that gave me that impression. Maybe just the simple fact that he hadn't put a blade in me yet. He steered the bike back onto the main road, and within minutes we arrived at the university's entrance, where the tyrannical guard stepped out of the gatehouse. Cade slowed his bike, and as the wind died down around my head, I pushed up from him a bit.
"Evening, Professor Bramwell,"
the guard said.
"Evening,"
Cade responded in a clipped tone. The guard tipped his head, eyeing me, clearly unable to see my face through the black shield the way he so brazenly stared.
"That a student with you? Just company."
Another once-over, and the guard's gaze lingered on my bare feet, where I curled my icy toes around the knurled footpeg. Frowning, he shook his head and turned his attention back to Cade, his hand resting on the gun at his hip.
"This must be your midlife crisis ride, eh?"
He chuckled. I could have probably screamed right then, let the guard know that I was in trouble, but doing so would have surely put me back on Lippincott's radar, and I didn't know which was the lesser of two evils right then. At the very least, I was closer to Devrick by being on campus.
"Yeah,"
was all Cade said in response. The guard waved us on and strode back to the gatehouse.
"Have a good night, Professor."
Not a minute later, the bike lurched into motion again, and I watched Cade punch the same code onto a keypad that I punched to get into Devrick's lab. The gate opened, and he drove through. My heart pounded, waiting to see where he was going to go from there. He turned the bike into a parking ramp just outside of the admin building and punched the code again. The gate opened, allowing us access to the ramp, and Cademan parked on the ground level. It occurred to me right then what he'd come to do. I climbed off the bike, and as I carefully pushed the helmet off, I winced at the burn streaking across my stitches. Blood coated the inside of the helmet when I handed it back to him. "You're going to kill Lippincott," I said boldly. It should have troubled me more that he planned to kill the provost, but it somehow felt like karma. For my mother, for me. Lippincott deserved what was coming to him. "Why bring me with you?" The hardness in his eyes softened only a bit, and he reached out to thumb the blood from my jaw.
"You're better off with me."
"Better off?" Scowling at the implication behind his words, I shook my head. What the hell does that even mean?
"Weeks I've watched you. In class, while you sleep."
His confession sent a shiver of distress up my spine, while the visual of him watching me sleep played inside my head.
"He doesn't deserve you. None of them do."
"He loves you, you know. I have no idea what you've been through, but I know he still grieves for you." His lips snarled.
"He's a liar. Or have you forgotten already?"
he asked, undoubtedly referring to his involvement in the Rooks. I didn't know what Devrick had done to him, how he'd lied to his brother, and I suspected Cade wouldn't tell me. I haven't forgotten. He did lie to me, and for that he's an asshole. But I'm allowed to forgive him. That's my choice, Cade, not yours. Jaw shifting, he studied me for a moment.
"Then, I guess this is where we part ways."
As he climbed off the bike, I turned for the exit but paused. "You don't have to do this, you know. Devrick would help you." He sneered and unlocked a small storage compartment strapped to the back of his bike, from where he lifted out the plague mask. Moving to his pocket, he fished out a chip, presumably the one he'd swiped from Gilchrist, and handed it to me.
"Get out of here. Don't make me regret letting you take off on your own."
I tucked the chip into my pocket. "I can handle myself."
"I'm sure you can, Covington."
Not sparing another minute, I sprinted out of the garage and across campus, barefoot. By the time I reached the incinerator room, my feet throbbed, cold and stiff as a day-old corpse. I nabbed one of the lab coats on the way into the lab to stave off some of the chill still racking my body. When I entered Devrick's office, I skidded to a stop on spying his upturned chair and dashed around the desk to make sure he hadn't had another seizure. Something pricked the bottom of my foot, and I lifted it to find a tiny shard of glass sticking out of my heel. After plucking it out, I looked around to see a shattered decanter and a spattering of blood across the floor. The scene suggested a fight had broken out, and my thoughts spun back to the notification he'd received on his phone earlier that someone had broken in. Oh, God. Had he fought someone, or had someone ransacked his office? What to do? I ran another search of the lab and offices, peeking into the doors and the cadaver fridge in search of Devrick. Jogging out to the cadaver entrance showed that his car wasn't parked in the lot there. Perhaps he really had fought an intruder, then headed back to the mansion. Damn it. I decided to return to his office and wait, in the event he called the phone there. Skirting the broken glass, I uprighted the chair and noticed that the computer cord lay unplugged from the wall. Frowning, I plugged it back in. And when the login screen popped up, I punched in the password I'd seen Devrick type at least a dozen times over the last week. The screen populated all of the applications he'd had open before it had gotten unplugged, one of which was a video. I clicked on it. The scene played out a gruesome attack on what I was certain was Jenny Herrick. Given the features I recognized from the missing persons posters I'd seen around campus, when the hand appeared on the other side of the incinerator window, I tumbled backward into Devrick's seat, both hands covering my mouth. Oh my God. Oh my fucking God. An eerie dread crept over me, raising the hairs on the back of my neck. I stared off for a moment, trying to absorb what I'd just seen, my pulse pounding in my ears. Lippincott had killed her, murdered her by burning her alive, and had remained silent about the whole thing, letting the campus turn Devrick into a monster. I hoped Cade gutted the sick bastard. Rubbing a hand over the back of my neck, I mentally batted away the last 10 seconds of the video clip that played on loop inside my head, and stuffed the chip from Gilchrist into the drive. Numerous files popped up, all of them dated and labeled in order. I clicked on one of the files, a letter to the board that appeared to have been written by Bramwell describing an adverse event, swapped inoculations. January 15th, I read aloud. Dr. Darrow's administered doses of toxins that he'd noted were discolored, possibly contaminated. Who'd swapped them? A vision of Lippincott rifling through Jenny Herrick's bag just before he'd killed her slid into my thoughts. Was it possible those files contained the same information? A notification flashed across the computer screen at the same time that I heard a loud thunk echo down the hallway. The only time the notification popped up on screen was when a code, other than Devrick's, had been punched into the keypad. Shit. I scrambled to remove the chip, which I stuffed into my pocket, and unplugged the computer just as it had been before. Glancing around the office showed very few places to hide, and with the sound of approaching footsteps, my pulse roared through my veins. I dashed across the office for the closet and shut myself inside. Less than a minute later, I heard a crunching sound, like whoever it was had stepped on some of the glass, slow footfalls that seemed to trail off as if they'd retreated. I cracked the closet door enough to see a figure standing in the doorway, peering out into the hallway. When they turned back toward the office, I was greeted by the plague mask. Cade? I didn't dare utter a word as I watched him twist away again. He stepped out into the hallway, and I exhaled a sigh. The closet door swung open. A second figure, wearing the plague mask, loomed over me. A scream ripped from my throat.
Chapter 66, Devrick. About a mile from campus, my phone buzzed in my pocket, and I answered immediately on seeing a call from Langmore. What is it?
It's Winthrop. He's asked you to return to the roost. They have Lilia.
Dread twisted up my insides, and I pulled the car over to the side of the road as I clicked out of the call. You need to get out, I said without looking at Gilchrist. I'm sorry.
Good grief. I am just about tired.
Get out!
Okay, fine. I'll get out.
She slid from the passenger seat, and the moment she closed the door, I hit the gas toward the roost. The main building was an old Catholic church, built long before the monastery, but like parts of the monastery, it had survived the Great Fire. What had made it such an inviting piece of real estate for the Rooks was that it happened to be connected to tunnels that ran beneath the entire island, built into the rock. The Rooks had it remodeled and updated with all the latest technology, turning the old church into something of a fortress. I pulled up to the gate, which was manned by a brute more tyrannical than Sam at Dracadia's entrance. He didn't even bother to check my credentials as he allowed passage.